Hi, this is Justin Halliday, the creator of Hero Kids, and you're listening to The Family Gamers.
Hello, and welcome everybody to episode 64 of The Family Gamers Podcast.
I am your host, Andrew, and I am here with my lovely wife, Anitra.
That's me.
Bum ba da bum 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 ba da bum.
Many years from now, will you still be sending me a Valentine? Birthday greetings, bottle of wine.
All right, I guess I do know something about 64.
Yeah.
That was lovely.
Thank you.
Anyway, we are super excited to bring you this show. We have awesome news this week.
So awesome.
So exciting.
So cool.
And we have tons of games that we've been playing. This has been a really great 2 weeks for playing games.
Sure.
I mean, we've had a lot of, like, you know, boring real life stuff happen too, but like, we've played a lot of good games.
It's been a really stressful 2 weeks. but in the cracks, we've managed to fit in a lot of really good games.
Right, right. So, our topic this week, we're going to talk about some board gaming terms. So a long time ago, I don't know how many episodes ago, we talked about some video game terms and maybe some things that you might have heard, maybe you didn't know quite what they meant, and we were trying to kind of fill in some gaps in people's knowledge, and that was fun. And this week, we're going to try to do kind of the same thing with board games. So undoubtedly, lots of our listeners will already know what most of these mean. Maybe they won't know one or two of them or whatever. And if you're a more casual gamer, maybe some of this will be super interesting to you. And it might even, offer you a mechanic that you might find interesting in a game and you might want to check out.
Or maybe we'll just add some terms to your vocabulary that you can throw around and sound like a hardcore board game.
Yeah, sure, whatever. So, but before we get into that, as we always do, let us talk about what we've been playing.
What have we been playing, Andrew?
Oh, man. We've been playing a lot of things.
We have.
So, a couple weeks ago, we actually kind of impromptu went over a friend's house for dinner. And as we are wont to do, afterwards, we sent the children off to watch the evil screen monster in the other room. And we played some board games with the parents, like, you know, adults.
To be fair, the children also played some board games and a lot of running around games. So, you know, it wasn't all...
Right.
It wasn't all screen time.
Right. That's true. That's true. This first game. Ooh.
We played Ingenious.
Ooh.
It
from
was
Fantasy Flight Games, yeah. And Dr. Reiner Kinesia.
Yes. I really liked it. It's an abstract strategy game. You're building lines of each particular color. Mm-hmm. And as you build a line, you know, each time a person adds on to it, they get more and more and more points, depending how long the lines are.
Right. So every single tile that you have a set of like six or seven tiles in front of you. Yeah. Each one of them is kind of a double hex tile.
Yeah, right? It's sort of a domino style.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they have some, it's very domino, like some combination of two colors. Sometimes they're the same color, sometimes they're different colors. And you place them down to form lines of colors. And basically, you count how many things there are in each line that do not contain the domino that you placed,
mm-hmm.
Right? And that means that it can be lines in many different directions.
Yeah, because it's on a hex grid, you could have lines in three or four different directions.
Right, of multiple colors.
Right.
Right. So the game keeps going around and around and around until you fill up the entire board and there's nowhere else to go.
Yeah.
And whoever has the most points wins.
Well, one of the strategies...
All right, well, that's not really true. Yeah. That's not true.
It's not just about getting the most points. It's about balancing your point load.
That's correct.
Because whoever has the most points in the color that they have the least points in...
Right. So there are...
Whoever has the most least points.
Five colors? Four colors. Five colors.
Six colors.
Six colors.
Because it's a hexagon.
That's brilliant. And as you go along, you have to get, I think 19 points is like the threshold.
It's the limit, yeah.
So whichever one you have the least amount of points in, that is your kind of like final point total at the end of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And whoever has the highest of those.
Yes.
Wins the game.
Yes.
And I had this game sealed up. ladies and gentlemen. I mean, sealed up. I had multiple paths to victory. And I blocked someone, them all. Someone threw the game.
No.
To someone else.
Okay. I didn't just throw the game because I was dead last. I was going to lose no matter what. And so I looked at what was available to me and said, how can I cause as much chaos and discord as possible?
But it wasn't chaos and discord. It was you chose that that other person would win instead of me.
That part was unintentional.
Your loving, doting husband.
Oh, get over it.
Some year. As I ground you into board game pestle. Oh, all right. I'm a little extreme. But it was a really fun game.
Yeah.
And I'd love to play it again. We don't have it, but our friends do.
But our friends do. So I'm sure we'll get another chance.
Probably. So we played one of their games, and then they played one of our games. And that game was?
Baron Park.
We've talked a ton about Baron Park.
We love Baron Park.
We released a review for Baron Park last week.
Everyone should play Baron Park.
Yes, play Baron Park. If you like patchwork, you'll like Baron Park.
Yes. If you like bears.
If you like bears. And koalas are not bears, but they're adorable, so they're in the game.
Yes.
Is what it boils down to. What else did we play?
We played a Game Right party game called Think in Sync.
Mm-hmm.
This was
A classic, like, play this game nice and late at night.
This was a game you either play with really good friends late at night, or you play as an icebreaker with total strangers.
Yes.
This would not go well with people who you kind of know, but, you know.
Well, it could. I mean,
it could.
I just don't think that's where its strength is.
Yeah. Because as you go around your circle, pairs of people are trying to do like a Family Feud style, answer a question and get the same answer at the same time. So some of our pairings worked really well. Some were hilariously bad.
Oh, the whole thing was hilarious. Everything was hilarious.
But it was hilarious and fun. I think I would actually really enjoy playing it with a larger group, although mm-hmm. It played fine with four people.
Yeah, I mean, there's kind of a like structure to the game, which is kind of, it's one of those games, almost like a lot of trivia games. I mean, it's not a trivia game, but almost like a lot of trivia games where you kind of play the game and then you're like, let's just do the card thing and just who cares about the board?
Yeah, right? just play the game until you're tired of playing the game.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so there was some kind of point dynamics and stuff like that, and that was just...
We gave up on that pretty soon.
That part was not...
Because it was the last game of the night we played, right. And we're just like, we're just going to play this until the kids are done watching the movie, and then we're done.
Right. But before that, we played a game that you had previously played before, solo, and talked about on the show, and I had not played before at all, and that was Flip City.
It was Flip City.
So that's another game we got from Tasty Minstrel Games.
Yes. Flip City has some very odd dynamics to it. We actually spent a lot of the car ride home talking about it.
I really like it.
I don't like it as much as you, but I do like it.
Mm-hmm.
It's got that sort of city builder dynamic, right, of like a Machi Koro or a Puerto Rico or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But you're also doing things like upgrading buildings, and there's not a whole lot of randomness involved, but there's enough. Like, there's not as much randomness as, say, a Machi Koro.
Well, I mean, it's the kind of thing where, you know, the better you are at counting cards.
Yeah.
You know, the better you would be at a game like this.
So, Flip City is a deck builder, city builder game.
Right.
We will probably talk about it even more in the future.
Probably. I mean, I suspect that we will be writing a review of this game. It's interesting because it's a deck builder that kind of combines some of that leveling up of your cards kind of aspect. So, you know, it matters what side your cards are flipped to, that kind of thing.
You have to be very careful shuffling and dealing cards because you don't ever want to flip the cards unintentionally.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But it's fun. I definitely like it, and I'm looking forward to playing some more of it.
Yeah. Let's see what else. Still playing more Go Away Monster. It's a super fast play. The three-year-old's always up for it. The bigger kids don't mind playing it with him, which is nice. It keeps him slightly less interested in the big kid games, which also
nice. Well, he has a game for him. Right. And exactly. That's a thing that's actually really important for kids, is to have stuff that they feel like is theirs.
Yeah.
And that's been very, very valuable for us. I mean, even beyond this, even with the robot game, which was basically a... a less horrible version of Cootie, right?
Yes.
It's just, it's something for him to hold on to and have. And,
yep.
And that kind of helps him feel less like he's left out when we're trying to play something a little more complicated.
Mm-hmm. And to be fair, Go Away Monster is a lot more loud and rambunctious.
Mm-hmm.
A lot more like some of the games we play with the older kids in the family, where we're kind of like, oh, how'd you get that?
Right. Which is something you have to do when you play games with kids when you're playing a Take That game.
Yes. We have a special version of Uno.
Yeah, how did this happen? Disney Princess Uno made it back on the table. I thought this was going to like mysteriously disappear into the ether.
You know what? Other than the fact that the theme is kind of unappealing, shall I say?
To us.
It's Uno with an extra feature. And so Disney Princess Uno has been resurrected, and the two older kids have played it several days in a row now. So there's something there. They enjoy it. As long as they're not asking me to play it, I'm okay with that.
All right. We also talked about My First Stone Age, I think, not on our last show, but on our last formal show, and how much I enjoyed playing that with Asher. And you talked about how it was a good, you know, a good game for multiple age ranges, basically.
I want him to play it with me, but instead, he showed his grandmother how to play it.
Well, what did she think of it?
She seemed to enjoy it.
There you go.
She picked up on it right away. Beat her because partially a memory game.
If she can figure a board game out, that is a testament to the fine folks.
Well, to be fair, she then traded with him and said, I have a game I want to show you. And so the two of them played a game called Celestia.
Mm-hmm.
Other than the last three rounds that I saw, I don't know anything about the game, but it looks interesting and complex enough to stay interesting, but easy enough for a six-year-old to understand.
Right, right. It's a push-your-luck game, right?
Yes. It's the kind of push-your-luck game that does better with more players. So with two players, it was a little shaky for them.
Mm-hmm.
You're sort of traveling around a board on an airship, and the farther along the board you get, the more points you can get, but only if you keep matching things. If you think that the captain of the ship will not be able to keep matching the symbols on the board with the cards in their hand, you can jump ship and say, nope, I want to stay here at the 6+ point pile.
Okay.
You know, or at the 3-point plus pile. Things like that.
Mm, interesting.
So, yeah.
Cool.
I'm looking forward to playing it with them sometime.
Well, I mean, I didn't see that because I have been playing a game. Oh, have I been playing a game. So, last week, CGE Check Games Edition released on iOS and Android Through the Ages, the game that I can never get anybody to play with me.
That is the best thing about iOS games.
Oh, this game, it's so good. This game, it is, and I've said this to you a million times,
yes,
and you can testify to this. This game is basically Civilization 2, the board game.
Yeah.
Right? And I've started to show you how to play through the pass and play on the iPad.
Yes.
It's a very faithful treatment of the game.
It looks good. It's just really complex.
Mm-hmm. And it is.
Like, if you're a person who played a lot of Civilization or Civ 2 or Civ 3, it's relatively intuitive, but it's still complex. You're trying to keep track of a lot of things going on at once.
So one of the things that I really like about it, which I kind of stumbled into when I first booted it up, the first thing I did is I went into single player, play against the AI, you know,
sure,
whatever.
Just get right into it.
But there's challenges. So it's, you know, everything is 20% cheaper. Play and win. Or, you know, you can only, instead of you lose your leader every second age or whatever, you pick a leader and that's your leader for the entire game. So if you want a better leader, you have to go without a leader for a while.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, things like that. And so there's all these different kinds of challenges. You know, everybody gets a culture bonus except for you, catch up to them, all this kind of stuff that tries to make it a little bit more interesting, maybe a little bit more difficult. And they're ranked. So there's the easy stuff and then the medium stuff and the hard stuff. I'm really, really bad at this game. I'm bad.
Well, challenge is show you that.
Yeah, I'm playing an easy challenge that I can't beat. I mean, I'm not good at Through the Ages. I love it. It's an awesome game, but I stink at it.
Well, keep practicing. So,
yeah, pretty much. And then tonight, we had our third family game night, co-sponsored with Barnes & Noble.
Yeah.
And it was awesome.
It was really awesome.
You and I did not play any games together.
Nope.
It was still awesome.
Yep.
So we started off the night I started off the night playing a Spiel des Jahres finalist this year, which was Magic Maze.
So although I didn't get to play this, I did look over your shoulder, and it's really cute.
Well, I forced you to play it after.
Later, when right. the game night was over.
So for anybody who hasn't played this game, and it wouldn't surprise me if you hadn't, because it was originally released internationally. It mm-hmm. wasn't in it wasn't in English, and it was recently localized by Dude Games, which is a company out of Canada. They did Sushi Dice, which mm-hmm. we reviewed. And Dude Games' shtick basically is to localize international games for an American audience. That's what they do.
Yeah.
And so Magic Maze has been released in the U.S. for, I mean, less than a month now, I think. And basically, the premise of the game is that there's a barbarian, a warrior, an elf, and a mage, and you're in a shopping mall. And you have to explore the mall, and each one of those characters has to steal a particular item and then escape the mall.
Yeah.
Right. And so the way it works is it starts with one, like, 16-square... tile, and then you have to explore your way out to figure out where everything is, all while you have a sand timer that's going, and if that thing ever runs out, you're toast.
Yeah, so it's all real time.
Yep, it's all real time.
The players are not supposed to talk to each other at all, or right. communicate.
Right, that's like
in any real meaningful way.
So there was a family that came because they saw the ads on Facebook, and I presented all of the rules to them, and they're like, oh, this sounds really interesting. Da, da, da. I was like, oh, one more thing. You can't talk. She's like, what? It was pretty funny.
And she still had a blast.
She did. So the way the game actually works is, even though there's these four tokens, you don't control a single guy. So what you have is you have a tile in front of you that is the moves that you can do.
The moves that you are allowed to do. So when in the two-player version that you showed me, I could move the characters north and east.
And I think you could do...
And I could use the teleporter things.
The vortexes.
Vortex.
Yeah, so you could go north and east and vortex, and I could go south and west and up and down escalators, and I could explore. And so there's a lot of like going back and forth where I'm moving things, maybe two or three spaces, and then you have to move those same ones.
Yeah, and if I'm not sure what you're trying to do... I'm like, I wanted to move it this way. And you're like, no, I wanted to move it the other way. And I'm like, but there's nothing to do over there. Right. I don't know what you're looking for.
There was one moment when we were playing, just the two of us were playing together, where I had my eye on the sand timer, which was about to run out. And we were right next to one of the icons that allows you to flip the sand timer to get more time.
Mm-hmm.
And you moved somewhere. And then I moved it immediately back to where it was. But I couldn't tell you why.
Yeah.
And you can't like make hand motions or like point at the timer or anything like that. So you just stared at me like you were going to murder me.
Why are you moving then? I can't put him anywhere.
But eventually you got it.
And then eventually I figured it out. Yeah.
So it's really, really fun, and there's something like 17 to 20 scenarios in the box, which basically there's, I think, 25 of these tiles. Mm-hmm. And in scenario one, which is the one that we played, obviously start with tile one, but then tiles 2 through 9 are face down and shuffled. And then as you explore, you kind of put them out, and it becomes a sort of organic...
It's definitely a
randomly generated quote-unquote thing. But as the different scenarios... are played out, you use different tiles, and so there's extra mechanics that we haven't really played with, like security cameras and crystal balls and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Really neat. Really, really neat mechanic. I think this is a mechanic that's going to get copied. I mean, it might get copied with some adjustments or some differentiations, but I think that there's going to be some copying of this kind of thing, especially with it getting the SDJ nomination. So,
well, and I like the fact that like each player can only do part of the movement, means that it really can be, I mean, you wouldn't do it as one player because that would
There is a solo variant.
There is a solo variant. But anything from like 2 to 8 players without significantly changing the experience, because you're still moving the four little guys around.
Right. Yeah, it's cool. And basically what they do is the more players you add, the less things you can do with your tile.
Each person can do.
So yeah. we had a 4-player game going during the game night where the only thing I could do was move characters north. That was it.
Yep.
And it was annoying because I had the experience of playing the game before.
Right. But you could do the least stuff.
I could do the least stuff. But at the same time, you know what? They had a blast playing it.
Yeah.
It was really, really fun. Very fun game. Highly recommend. I think it's $30 at Barnes & Noble. Probably the same price on Amazon or whatever. Yeah. So highly recommend that game. A lot of fun. You played a game that you fell in love with.
So I have been seeing since Origins, I believe, pictures of this game. Number 9. NMBR 9.
Number 9. This isn't like a Beatles White Album thing, is it?
No.
Okay, just checking.
It is, surprise, surprise, an abstract strategy game.
Those are your thing. Like, totally.
It really is.
Yeah.
I can't explain it. There's just something about, like, the bright colors call to me.
People have preferences, predilections, fetishes.
That might be taken a little far. Number 9, you have these tiles that have taken all of the numbers, all of the digits 0 through 9, and sort of made them into a digity tile format where each number is subtly different with cutouts and things, but a very pixelated sort of thing. And a single person draws cards off the deck, and as a card is drawn, everybody takes that number and adds it to their pile, their construction that they're building. The goal is to be the person with the most points, but the way you get points is the bottom layer of your construction that is touching the table, everything there is worth 0 points. That is layer 0. Layer 1, sitting above that, everything is worth face value. Layer 2, everything is worth 2 times the face value. And so on and so on. Looking around, I've seen pictures of people getting it up to layer 4 or possibly even layer 5. But the best we did was layer 3. Which usually had one thing on.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't play at all.
The rules are really simple. When you're putting down a new number, it has to touch some number on the level you're putting it on, unless it's the first one on that level. And anything above level 0 needs to be touching at least 2 numbers underneath it while not overhanging any empty space.
Okay.
So it sounds complicated, but like it makes sense. You can see as you put down, like, oh no, you know, I put down a 0 on the bottom level, and then you try to put down a 2 over it. Oh, well, I can't because now it's over the hole that's in the 0.
Ah, okay. Yeah, that's annoying.
So it's very abstract, but it's really cool to kind of puzzle out how to fit the shapes together best and how to keep it compact so you can keep building up, because building up is how you get points, not building out on the table. It's definitely simple enough for a 5 or 6 year old to play, although they will probably get frustrated when they see that everybody else is building up and they're just kind of building out.
Mm-hmm.
But the pieces are nice, heavy, tactile. They're it's neat to just kind of puzzle them together.
Sure.
So I enjoyed it. The younger kids I played it with enjoyed it some. The older kids and adults I played it with really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was funny because you were on one side playing a game, and then I was on at another table playing a different game. You were playing Number 9, I was playing Magic Maze, and then we had somebody else come, and so I transitioned off from Magic Maze, and the people that I was playing with came over to play more Number 9 with you.
Yes.
And then I sat down with these other people and we played Downforce, mm-hmm. which is the new game from Restoration Games. And Restoration Games is the company started by Rob Davio, who's the guy who basically created the Legacy games, so Pandemic Legacy, Risk Legacy, that stuff. And their first game was Stop Thief, which was a sort of a remake of the 1979 Stop Thief. We've talked about it on the show. We love that
game. We enjoyed it.
It's a great heartily. Game. And Downforce was a remake of a game that was originally called Top Race, which was redone by Milton Bradley as Formula 500. And I think even Top Race was a remake of something else, but it was the first time they introduced the racing theme to this kind of mechanic. And so now it's Downforce.
Okay.
And Downforce is a game where it's kind of interesting because it's not a game like Formula D, which is a game where you are the race car and you're racing through a track. Instead, Downforce is a game where, yes, you at the beginning of the game, there's six race cars and people kind of bid to try to own a race car and everybody's got to have at least one. But the way to win the game is to have the most money. And you have the most money by betting on the right cars to win. Also by winning with your cars.
Mm-hmm.
And also by owning cars by not without spending a lot of money on them, even though it's kind of a blind bid process to get them.
Okay.
And so you kind of combine all that together. You combine your bet winnings, you combine your cars that you own and their winnings, first place prize, second place prize, whatever. Okay. And then you subtract the money that you spent to buy the cars to begin with.
Okay.
And whoever's got the most money after all that wins the game. And so the way the game is played, there's a few things. First of all, if you've played the old Formula 500, they did remove drafting from Downforce. So if that was something that you thought was annoying, it is not in Downforce. Although I talked to somebody who has played Formula 500, and he said that there's no mechanical pieces for drafting. It was just a part of the rules. So it's probably something you could do if you really wanted to. But the way the game actually works is you play cards that have different colors on them and different numbers associated with those colors, and sometimes those things are wild or whatever. And so I would play a card that has like orange 5, green 3, black 1, yellow 1, and those cars would move that number of spaces.
Okay.
And so you're kind of trying to mix and match and get your stuff ahead, and then there's three places on the board where you kind of pick who you think's going to win.
Okay.
And at each one of those places where you are placing a bet, obviously the first threshold, if you're correct, you win more than that second threshold because it's closer to the end and like that. And then there's also like special abilities that very slightly modify how you play. So it would be things like, normally on your turn, you play a card and you move everybody's car.
Mm-hmm.
There's an ability that says that anytime one of your cars is moved, you're the one who moves it. Like they say, oh, it moves four spaces, but you can move it on the track. And that matters because there's some places where the inside track is one less spot. There's even, you know, there's certain things that you can do because there's like choke points on the racetrack. Mm-hmm, so if it's not going to, that card wouldn't affect that. But while you're playing, you could plan it so that you move one thing into a choke point, and then all these other cars that move, they can't get past it, so it kind of wastes all their turn.
Yep.
Which is, you know, a handy thing to do. But yeah, and there's, you know, things like if every space that you move onto is rectangular, then you get an extra two spaces. Like, somebody really guns it on the straightaways kind of thing.
Sure.
And so those are the special abilities. But ultimately, the whole game is all about this sort of, you're looking at the cards in your hand, you're kind of trying to read the tea leaves from what you've seen out, and you're trying to win the most money. And it was fun. It was, you know, just like Stop Thief, where you could tell that it was an older game, you could just feel it from the mechanics.
Yeah.
This was the same way.
Sure.
But it didn't make it any less fun. It's just that you could feel that it didn't have these, like, kind of new school mechanics to it.
Yep. Right? I understand. Wait.
Right? So, so that was Downforce. That was yet another thing that we played today, which was lots and lots of fun.
So, we said our topic for today is going to be some board game term definitions.
Speaking of old school versus new school.
Yes. So, why don't we do a quick lightning round of those and then go to a break?
Sure. So, you ask me one, I'll ask you one, we'll figure it out. Okay.
Sure.
What is a meeple?
It is also known as a pawn.
Boring.
I know. A meeple is a special kind of pawn or token that you would move around the board that usually is shaped to look like a person.
So the etymology is it's a little people that represents me, and therefore it is a meeple.
Exactly. What does it mean to tap a card?
It means you smack it with your hand and then move on.
Really? That no, I've been I'm playing kidding. Magic all wrong.
Yeah, right. Tap is a the term tap became popular with Magic the Gathering.
Right.
And essentially what it really means is you turn a card sideways to indicate that it's been used.
Sure.
Right? You turn a card or a board or whatever it is sideways. Right? Okay. If you actually look, it has changed. If you look at old Magic cards, it is a diagonal T. Now it's an arrow.
Fancy.
I'm a nerd. A
little bit.
Yep. Okay, what is a D6, D10, D20, D12, D4? What are those?
Those are ways to represent dice.
Okay.
So a D6 is your standard six-sided die.
Okay.
But for people who don't play a lot of really nerdy games, dice come in other sizes and shapes.
We lament the long-forgotten D12. Barbarians I like
the D12.
Only.
So you can get four-sided, six-sided, eight-sided, 10-sided, 12-sided, 20-sided. Technically, you can get 100-sided, but we would recommend 2 10-sided instead. So, hence, D4, four-sided die.
Right.
What is an FLGS?
Your FLGS is your friendly local game store. So,
aww.
Yeah, right. You know, these are sometimes hard to find in certain communities. We live in an area right next to one of the biggest cities in New England, really, outside of Boston. And I think it's the second largest city in Massachusetts.
Think so.
And I can think of one place that would qualify as an FLGS, and its primary business is not games.
Yeah.
So sometimes they're just hard to find. You know, you may get lucky and have one in the area. We've had, in the last 2 years, we've had two that opened and closed.
Yeah.
Just because it's super hard to run that kind of specialty store without a pre-existing fan base or customer base.
This is part of why we, as the Family Gamers, have talked a little bit about Target and Barnes & Noble.
Right.
Because sometimes it's still worth it to go see something in person rather than Amazon, but not everybody has a local game store. We don't.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and it's super hard, right? Because obviously there's a lot of benefit to the tactile experience of holding a game in your hands. And as much as we love and adore Amazon for many, many reasons, I mean, it would be a kind of a sad world if we had no brick and mortar stores.
Yeah.
So, if there is an FLGS in your area, I would say, you know, try to check them out and see, you know, what kinds of things they may be doing. You know, it could even be a place where you meet friends to play games, even if they're games that you bring, just to get some customers in the store. Maybe you'll see something, or maybe you can ask them about something. Sometimes locally owned FLGSs will cut you a deal.
Yeah.
If you're willing to buy games from them. You know, if you walk in and you say, hey, I heard about Downforce on a podcast, do you have the game? And they say, no, but I can order it for you and I'll give you 10% off because I don't have it. Or something like that. You know, that helps them.
Yeah.
That helps you. They're going to make orders anyway. They just stick it in an order. So I would say, you know, I'm a firm supporter of local business. Check out your FLGS.
Please. And with that, let's take a break.
All right. We'll be right back.
Big news after the break.
And we are back from our break with our big news. This is news that we found out literally today. We are recording the podcast one day late because we had a super busy weekend, but it turns out that is to your benefit.
Oh, we are so excited.
I got this email today, and I literally let out a loud, audible gasp when I got this email.
It's Muppet Flail time, because we are presenting a panel at PAX Unplugged.
So, so if you are going to PAX Unplugged on Sunday at 11:30, tentatively, in the Diorat Theater, you can see us.
the whole family gamers,
right?
Kids and all.
Yes, we are bringing our 9-year-old and our 6-year-old, and probably they will be too shy to say a whole heck of a lot, but they are going to be on stage with us, hopefully willing to answer questions and contributing a little bit and giggling and being generally adorable. But we're going to talk a lot about the dining room table and how it's not just for food.
Yeah.
It's something that we like to come around and we like to play games at the table. And we'll talk a little bit about some kind of real, a lot of the stuff we talk about on the show, really.
Yeah.
But
you can see us in person talk about the kind of stuff we talk about on the show.
Yeah, pretty much. We had a friend recently who said, huh, wow, you guys actually do interact in person the same way you do on the podcast.
Yes, we really do.
Funny. Yeah,
It's edited for time and ums.
Yes, pretty much. But we're the same people. So please come and check it out. There's going to be prizes. We've already got some sponsors who have said that if we got a panel, they'd be happy to contribute.
Yes,
prizes to the show. So you should come because there's going to be stuff we're going to give away. We're going to take questions at the end. So if there's anything that you would like to know. I mean, I'm nervous. I'm like, my freakouts are having freakouts, but yeah. I'm super excited.
Yeah.
Once we get there, I will be the least nervous of the four of us, for sure.
Oh, for sure.
But
right now, you're the most nervous, but that will pass. And and the children and I will just get more and more nervous until we get
there. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to talk about any of the other potential stuff we have planned, but we've already been discussing some interesting content ideas for the panel. So come check us out, 11:30 on Sunday.
PAX Unplugged in Philadelphia.
Woohoo!
In the meantime, you did some cooking for science.
For science, hey!
For science.
We had to get together on Friday night, and we had these sweet and spicy Doritos. Oh, they were awesome.
They were pretty good.
They were so good. And so, you know, we knew that we were going to get together on Sunday to watch the football game. And so I was like, you know what would be really amazing is if we crush these things up and, like, use them to bread chicken tenders. Right?
And you can't see the look on his face right now.
Yeah, I'm doing the wide-eyed nod with the open mouth thing. I'm
like, almost rolling.
So we were super stoked about these. And so, you know, we took some chicken thighs. So it's a dark meat. It's a little bit moister. So I sliced them into strips. We dredged them in flour, a little bit of egg, shook out the egg because we had some breading mishaps in the past. So we've been kind of learning our technique.
Yes.
Then we coated them and then we didn't deep fry them. We just kind of pan fried them with a little bit of peanut oil. And they look, how'd they look?
They looked pretty professional.
Yeah. Well, what can I say? We all worked together on them. It wasn't just me.
I had nothing to do with this.
And then we ate them.
And they were meh.
They were meh. So our running theory on this one is that a lot of the flavor in Doritos, and I'm pretty sure I know this to be true, a lot of the flavor in Doritos comes from the powder that is actually on the corn chips.
Yeah. And you think most of that came off when you fried them?
Well, there was no flavor. I mean, it tasted like cornflakes, basically.
It tasted greasy and like cornflakes.
So that was disappointing. We were super excited for these, and we ate them anyway, but
it was fried chicken. Yeah, of course you ate it anyway.
Come on. So we're gonna do it again, and I will have a for science update for you. But we're gonna do it. We're gonna bake them next time.
Okay. Hopefully that'll keep that sweet, spicy. Extra flavor on them.
If not, I'm just gonna eat sweet and spicy Doritos and just be done with it.
Just eat sweet and spicy Doritos and have a little bit of chicken. And,
right.
Yeah.
I don't even need the chicken. I'll just eat the Doritos.
Don't need to combine.
Yeah, just Doritos and Diet Coke. It's pretty much what I eat anyway. So
that's football food.
Yeah, more or less. So, but that was our four science bit, and now we're gonna talk a little bit more about some fantastic board gaming terms. I think we'll do a short part because we talked about an awful lot of stuff.
We talked about a lot of games
earlier in the show, and I don't want people to be falling asleep while driving or anything. So
we'll just address a couple more, a little bit more complex terms.
Yeah, sure. Why not? What do you got?
So a big one that came up on an interview a little while ago that I had to look up, and I was ashamed to admit I didn't know, was 4X. 4X stands for explore, expand, exploit, and exterminate.
So 4X is something that actually kind of, I think, originated in the video game space, right? So I think the first 4X game that I ever remember playing was a game called Star Wars Rebellion, which I actually now own on Steam, and it doesn't really run very well, and it makes me sad. But I think I want to say games like Sins of a Solar Empire kind of implemented that sort of 4X idea. Eve, the I guess MMO, it's not really an MMO, but that's a kind of a game that sort of implemented a similar kind of thing. Usually they're space themed. They don't have to be space themed, but 4X has really been coming into the board game space. So they actually remade Star Wars Rebellion as a board game. Yes. Which I would love to get my hands on, but it's kind of outside our wheelhouse, and I don't know who I would ever play it with. So I haven't really pushed that one. But so that definitely is a 4X board game. But I know you've got a couple others.
So there's Clash of Cultures. There's actually a board game based on EVE Online.
Okay.
Omega Centauri is a popular one, as well as Race for the Galaxy.
Race for the Galaxy is a 4X game. I don't really think of it as one.
Some of the expansions are more 4X-y than than the main game. But Scythe is another. Well, once again, an expansion to Scythe makes it a 4X game.
Okay.
Seafall.
Okay. Sure. So that's a 4X legacy game.
It's
that's
a 4X legacy game.
I think the biggest one that I can think of that you haven't mentioned already is Twilight Imperium, which is a game that's about to get a reprint, actually. So if you want Twilight Imperium, just kind of wait a little bit. They're about to release the fourth edition of that. So that's a 4X game.
Yeah. So.
They're usually long.
Yes.
Drawn out. That's why I said Race of the Galaxy is because it's not. I mean, Race of the Galaxy usually lasts under an hour, but usually a 4X game is a long, kind of drawn out. Like this is a multi-hour affair.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, once again, there are exceptions to that. Universal Rule, which I played at Granite Game Summit, is a 4X game in 20-something cards, and. While it's a little longer than I prefer to play, it was still only like half an hour. So.
Oh, that's not bad. You think half an hour is a long game?
There was a whole big lead up of explaining it before we could get playing. Once we played, it was about half an hour.
Oh, okay.
So.
Oh, all right. Let's see here. What do I want you to talk about? Talk about deck building games.
Deck building games. Okay. So a deck building game is kind of what it sounds like. In a deck building game, usually you have cards, unless it's Quarriors.
or DC Dice Masters or Marvel Dice Masters, which are kind of any of those WizKids games.
But they use the deck building mechanic. In a deck building game, you are playing cards to amass some kind of currency, usually, to buy better cards, to do better things. Mm-hmm. And you're generally, each time you're getting new cards, they're going in your discard pile so you can't use them right away.
All right, and then they get kind of shuffled back into
your
deck.
So you're trying to cycle through what's in your deck so you can get to what's in the discard pile, shuffle it in, and play your more powerful cards.
Right, so I guess the classic two-player deck builder would be Ascension.
Sure.
And then the multiplayer deck builder would be Dominion.
Yes, Dominion is
those are kind of like
very popular deck builder games.
Those are the kind of classic, well-known games. There's 700 million expansions for Dominion.
Well, and there's just a ton of deck building games. I mean, as we've mentioned, Quarriors and the Marvel Dice Masters and stuff like that take the deck building mechanic
to dice,
and instead have you do it with dice.
And frankly, I like it better. So one of the things that I think people complain about with deck building games. And it's not true for all of them, it's true for some of them, is that it's almost like you're kind of playing your own game, and you're just in a race against the other person. Right? Dominion is very much like that. Like, when you get some of the expansions, you start actually affecting the other player, but Dominion is a game where it's basically a race to have the most powerful deck, and that's it.
Pretty much.
So that's just something to be mindful of when you're, like, if that doesn't appeal to you, just be mindful of the deck builder you're looking for.
The other thing true of pretty much every deck builder I've ever played is that because you start out with really weak cards, they usually have a very slow run-up, and then all of a sudden it feels like things are starting to happen faster and faster and faster near the end.
Mm-hmm.
So they can feel slow.
Yeah. Yep. So that's a deck builder. And I think that the more comfortable you are with the given deck builder that you're playing with, the faster that ramp up speed will happen.
Sure.
And things like that. So
yeah. Let's go with a fairly simple mechanic we talk about pretty often. Can you talk about what it means to press your luck?
Sure. So a press your luck game is basically a game where as you are playing the game, you are taking chances to get a higher or a better reward, right? So sort of an old school example of this that we've talked about on the show would be a game like Can't Stop.
Sure.
Where
yeah,
you,
Can't Stop's a pretty old one.
Yep, where you need to roll dice. And if you, when you roll those dice, you get a number that you can move your little like mountain climber or whatever he is up the row.
Your then little traffic cone.
Your little traffic cone or whatever it is, then you have more success. The problem is that as you keep going, it gets harder and harder to get the particular numbers that you want out of the dice that you roll. And so yes. You are pressing your luck, trying to get a better advantage. And at many points, you can stop and rest where you are and relinquish control of the dice to the next player, and they can play. But if you want to take chances, you can. It's kind of that boom or bust kind of mentality. Either you'll be really successful or you will just lose. Some very simple examples of press your luck games are games like Zombie Dice or Batman Dice, where you're rolling these dice and there's only 13 dice in the container.
Yeah.
But you can only suffer 3 shotgun blasts in a turn, and so as you're rolling, the possibility of getting shotgun blasts statistically is not going to change as you're moving dice out because you've got brains. But if you get one shotgun blast, now you can only handle 2 more and these kinds of things. And so it kind of becomes just a little bit more risky as you're going along because the benefit, all of those brain points that you could get is hopefully large enough as you're moving through the dice that you're taking a bigger chance because you would suffer a greater loss if you blew out on shotgun blast.
Sure.
So zombie dice or Batman dice or, you know, any of those are kind of the really like base level pressure luck games. And we've talked a little bit about how our now 6-year-old actually would just roll and roll and roll and roll and roll and roll and roll. And he didn't really care. But sometimes he would win because he would just get lucky enough that all of them would work out in his favor. So that's a press your luck game. And, you know, there's lots of different examples of them. They get a little bit more complicated. Sometimes Dairyman is a press your luck game, which has a little bit more complex dynamics to it than a game like a Zombie Dice or whatever, for example.
Well, something that nearly all press your luck games have in common is that you're rolling dice and trying to get a certain result.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking, I can't think off the top of my head of a single pressure luck game that does not involve dice.
I am sure they're out there.
I am sure they exist. And if you know of one, tell us in the comments on our website or on Facebook, please. Right.
Yeah,
I would love to know.
It's always good to kind of share that knowledge about all this stuff. So.
But yeah, they tend to be dice games. You roll a lot, you decide to stop at some point. Otherwise, you keep rolling and rolling and rolling and hope your luck doesn't run out and you lose everything.
All right, I think we'll do one more. You know, we're pushing up against an hour already, believe it or not. So we'll just do one more of these. And I'm going to ask you about a style of game that I actually don't really like all that much, which is why I'm letting you handle the question.
Okay.
Because I'm smooth like that. Talk about social deduction games.
So social deduction games are games where people have usually hidden roles of some sort, and you're trying to figure out who's got what role.
Mm-hmm.
It can be as simple as one person is a traitor and everybody else is not, and you're just trying to figure out who the traitor is.
Sure.
Or it can be significantly more complex, like Love Letter, which packs an awful lot of social deduction into a, 10-card game?
Yeah, I think it's like 14 cards or something. Yeah. I don't know. It's a small number.
It's a very small number of cards. It's definitely a type of game that's not for everybody. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that, to be perfectly honest, one of the reasons why I'm not a huge social deduction gamer, I guess, is because it seems like with our friend group, either we're playing games with younger people, in which case social deduction games really just don't work.
Yeah.
Or there are games that I want to play a whole lot more that are not social deduction games. And so it went in those rare opportunities that we get the chance to play with just adults, there's just something else I'd rather play.
Sure. My personal feeling has been that social deduction games are something I like to play once in a while. Mm-hmm. And so it's actually been a great thing to play at cons. Even though you would think it's harder because you're with a bunch of people you don't know.
So I guess In Vino Morte would be a social deduction
game. In Vino Morte is another incredibly simple social deduction game. Can I choose the wine in front of me, or should I choose the wine in front of you? Exactly. So.
Sure. So, I mean, I suppose there's a social deduction element to those party games like Apples to Apples and those kinds of things, because you're trying to read the judge, right? Or Cluster Fight.
Yes, definitely.
Or something like that. You're trying to read the judge when you choose that card that you're putting down to figure out, you know, what's going to win you the adjective.
You're trying to read the judge. And as the judge, you may also be trying to read a little bit of like, well, I like this answer better, but I'm pretty sure I know who put it down. And I'm not really sure that I want to give them the point.
I guess.
So I think there can be a social deduction element in a lot of games that have a lot of interpersonal interaction.
Sure.
But games that are purely social deduction, some people love them, but with us, they kind of
don't come out often. You know, it could be a time of life thing for us too. I'm not really sure. But they're not really our cup of tea right now.
Except for In Vino Morte.
I haven't played it yet.
I know.
So that's going to be it for us this week. There's lots of things that we didn't talk about. Area control, worker placement, resource management, Euro, stuff like that. If this has been helpful to you and you would like another show like this, please let us know. You can tell us on our Facebook page, facebook.com/FamilyGamersAA, or on our community at thefamilygamers.com/community, which goes right to our Facebook community.
You could also tell us on Twitter.
@FamilyGamersAA.
You can check out pictures from Barnes & Noble Game Night on Instagram.
@FamilyGamersAA. You can always email us, Andrew@TheFamilyGamers.com.
Anitra, Anitra, @TheFamilyGamers.com.
We are proud members of the Dice Tower Network. We are very thankful that Tom Vassell and crew are willing to have us crazy kids aboard on their loony adventures. So definitely check them out at thedicetower.com. As always, please head over to your podcast supplier of choice and leave us a review. We really, really appreciate those.
Please, please tell your friends, tell your neighbors, tell your enemies.
Sure, why not?
Why not?
We don't take it from our kids, but we'd love it from you. Give us back talk at any of these places and we will be happy to read it on the show. So that's going to be it for us this week. Until next week,
play games with your kids.